This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, it's Tuesday edition of Sharp Money. Matt Brown in for Patrick Adam Burke on the desk with me here as well. Wyatt Tomchek in the producer seat. Got some, you know, listen, tons and tons of basketball stuff going on that we will have to, like, basically dissect here over the next couple of months. What does this all mean? What does this do? We know one thing that happened yesterday that did change the odds market. We are a betting network, which was the Paul George move, because we saw them leapfrog several teams, Adam, from an odds perspective, where they now are the second shot to win it all. And if you kind of start to process everything, I don't necessarily know that this was the betting public overreacting really as much as it is just, hey, this is still a quality player heading to a team that is now forming a big three. And if you look overall, if they're able to slay the Giant being the Celtics, then you have a team that probably is better than any of the other teams over on the west side of things. And so I get it. I understand why. Look, we're so reactionary, right, with the betting markets these days. It's funny. We'll open up these betting markets and watch. Guy will be in the middle of pitching, you know, in an inning, and he'll walk two guys and his Cy Young odds will fall or whatever. You know, like they're betting somebody else. But I think that this move in general makes a lot of sense to me, because while I don't think Paul George is the player that he once was, obviously, pairing him up with Maxey, pairing him up with Embiid, they have some depth there as well for the Sixers. I understand the move with the odds.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, a lot of it just simply boils down to perception, right? I mean, the perception of the 76ers is Joel Embiid can't stay healthy. And he's kind of lived up to that perception for the most part. But it is one of those things where, you know, you look at this 76ers team, and I think that was the thing that people were worried about, right? They were sort of wondering, hey, what are they going to do to kind of give this guy a little bit more of a safety net? What are they going to do to kind of bolster this guy a little bit? And what are they going to do on nights when he can't play?
Yeah.
Or stretches where he can't play? So to me, that's one of those things that, you know, I think they had to make some kind of move. They did. They got a big name. They got a splashy name. And I also think that, you know, perception just rules the roost in these types of markets where people are going to look at it and say, oh, okay, they got an impact player. Let's see what happens.
Plus 295 for the Celtics to repeat as champions next year, but 8-1 on the 76ers, who did leapfrog the Thunder, the Nuggets, who are both sitting at 850, 950 on the Knicks, 10-1 on the Timberwolves, as are the Mavericks, who made a splash of their own. No pun intended. Get it? Splash. You get it?
All right.
Made a splash of their own.
5 points for Matt today.
Yeah, there we go. With Klay Thompson, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, Adam, and I look at this move and I sit here and I say, if Klay Thompson, he doesn't have to be Klay Thompson of old. If Klay Thompson can even just be 85% of what Klay Thompson used to be, I think this is great for the Mavs, right? I mean, you do have now, it wouldn't be a big three. It would be what we'd probably, maybe a 2.5. We'll call it a 2.5. It'll be a big 2.5. But if he can go out there and just not be asked to do much more than hit open threes and play a little defense, he can become kind of that 3-and-D guy as his career is toward, you know, winding down. It does add to this Mavericks team and certainly does make this Mavericks team better. And so they're 10-1, which is better than the Bucks that are 11-1. And then we go basically into the air quote long shots. You get all the way to 30-1 with the Lakers, 35-1 with the Suns, 40-1 with the Cavs, et cetera, et cetera. So you see these teams in here, and it's all these teams where we are looking at it and say, all right, they were fairly active, did some stuff. The Bucks didn't really have to do anything here in free agency. When you look now and you see the Mavs at 10, Bucks at 11, and then the next closest team all the way out at 30, do we feel like, okay, this is now we've moved NBA to a have and have nots league? Or do you think that this is just, you know what, maybe there's still some odd movement to happen yet?
Well, look, I mean, you know, I think the Thompson thing with Dallas specifically, I mean, in terms of average field goal distance, they were the second highest in the NBA. Only Boston was higher. Boston had the highest three-point rate in the league. Dallas was second. So Dallas needed a player like this, right? They're a jump shot-oriented team to begin with. So now you get a guy in Klay where Kyrie can, you know, kind of get through the lane, dish it out to Klay. Maybe it creates a shot for them. And so I think it was a good move. I think it makes sense, you know, where their odds are sitting here. But, you know, I will say we kind of touched on this yesterday a little bit, where you've got, you know, the eight teams, as you mentioned, 11-1 or lower to win the NBA title that are in pretty good shape. And then everybody else, I mean, either they're not good enough or they're kind of trying to figure it out, or they're a team that may get to a certain point in the season and decide, this is a really good draft class.
Yeah.
Like, we're not there. We're not a title-winning team. and then start selling off pieces at the trade deadline, use some of the salary cap loopholes, all those kinds of things. So I think you have, you know, let's say 10 teams that are actually going for it.
For sure.
And only 8 of those teams really have a chance.
And probably another 10 teams that would be in a tank market. And, you know, you start to look at some of these teams where would you really benefit from a tank? And I don't think the Spurs are an organization that are built to tank. I don't think that's what Pop has in his veins. I don't think he's the guy that wants to do that. However, you do wonder if you get to a point, like, it's going to be hard to lure a bunch of free agents to San Antonio, right? It just is. It's like we've seen now how this all works out. Everybody wants to move and go play with Splash in splashy cities and stuff like that. So if the Spurs were somehow able to wiggle their way into one of the worst teams in the NBA yet again, that would be beneficial to me. That's like the most exciting thing to me in this would be if the Spurs can figure out how to be bad without looking like they're just intentionally tanking and get a chance at one of these top players to pair up with Wimby, and then you really do have a team now that can be taken seriously. But it's going to be the Nets and the Hornets and the Pistons and the Blazers and the Raptors and the Jazz and the Wizards, all of these teams vying for trying to be the worst team in the league next
right.
year.
Yeah, and look, I mean, as good as Victor was for the Spurs this season, they still weren't a good basketball
yeah.
team. And, like, have they really added a whole lot? Have they gotten a whole lot better here? Have they given Wemby something to work with? You know, we talked about they brought in Chris Paul. What the hell is Chris
yeah.
Paul at this point
yeah. Yeah.
in his career? So the Spurs, just maybe by virtue of not really doing much of anything, just may not get a whole lot better. And that will put them in the mix, you know, for one of the top players. Because as you mentioned yesterday, this is a pretty deep, according to the analysts and the talent evaluators, a pretty deep first round where you can get a legitimate impact player maybe in the top 8 or the top 10 as opposed to the top 5.
I'm curious with Pop, how long do you think the Spurs are going to give him? Kind of like Bill Belichick. You know, Pop's had a couple bad years in a row now. Like,
well,
do you think his seat's starting to get a little hot, or is it kind of like he can do no wrong?
He had no – I mean, they had nothing this year. You had, like, you had Wimby and then nothing. So, I mean, he's there for life.
I mean, at 75 years old,
yeah,
how much longer does he want to do it?
Until he doesn't want to be there.
Right, until he
say.
Doesn't
yes.
want to be there. Anyway.
Yeah.
Which is kind of an interesting question, right? Because he's 75. Like, how long does it take? If let's say they get a top 8 player. Let's say maybe they win the draft lottery, something like that, right? They could turn this thing around in 2 or 3 years after this season.
Yeah.
Is he even still there?
Probably not. Probably not. But he probably gets it in a very good position for whoever
right.
does
yeah.
come in and take it. You are, if you were watching us yesterday, Cleveland Browns fan. I assume a Cavs fan as well. Not
they,
really
they exist.
Ish. They're there.
They exist, yeah.
Cavs and Donovan Mitchell agree to a max extension, 3-year, $150 million for Donovan Mitchell. In 55 regular season games last year, he did average 26.6 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals per game. He shot 37%. From 3, and in the playoffs, he stepped up, had a couple of monster games, averaged about 30 points per game in the playoffs. He's actually the first guard to average a minimum of 20 points in each of his first 7 seasons since Allen Iverson. That is a pretty good company to be in as well right there, as you see on your screen. Donovan Mitchell all-time ranks amongst Cavs, first in points per game, 3 points made, 60-point games, second in 40-point games, fourth in 30-point games as well, already there for Donovan Mitchell. If you're the Cavs and you're seeing what everybody else is doing, I'm not going to say your hand was forced, but it's like we better lock this dude up. We better go ahead and not mess around because these other teams are willing to spend. We have seen this. Everybody is willing to spend, so we better lock our dude up. He only had a year guaranteed left on the deal, so now he's there for the next 4 years for sure, and the Cavs at least know that they have their pillar to build around.
Yeah, I think what's difficult with the Cavs, I mean, they had no choice but to bring Mitchell back. That was something that they absolutely had to do. But now the talk is they're probably going to trade either Darius Garland or Jared Allen because I think they feel like they don't have the right types of players around Donovan Mitchell. Even though Mitchell's really good and even though this is a team that, you know, look, I think Kenny Atkinson's a good hire. I think that, you know, J.B. Bickerstaff was very limited. There's a lot about how he's a bad second-half coach, which going to the Pistons, that's not going to matter. And then, you know, the fact that he wasn't a very good playoff coach either. So maybe they're going to have the right coach now in the mix to kind of figure this thing out. But I don't think that they feel like they have the right personnel in place. And a guy like Jared Allen, I mean, he's a double-double machine, right? He's one of the top rebounders, you know, in the Eastern Conference. He's a guy who could chip in 16, 17 points a game. And Garland is a guy that kind of runs the offense. Like, I personally would keep both of them and try to figure out a different way to go about things. But seems like that's not really the way that they're going to go. So they're going to try and use one of those two assets to acquire additional assets, whether it's roster pieces or maybe, well, I mean, now you can't go for draft picks, right? Because you just gave Mitchell a boatload of money, which means you're not going to rebuild this thing. You're going to try to be as competitive as possible. And I think it's also difficult, right? Paul George signs yesterday. You do the Mitchell thing today because you have to, but you're still behind the Sixers by far.
Yeah.
You're still well behind the Boston Celtics, even though they're arguably the most competitive team against Boston in the postseason. And you're still behind a healthy Milwaukee team if they're healthy. So it's a tough thing for Cleveland. It's a tough situation. Great to get Mitchell back. I'm glad he wanted to stay. But I think their hands are a little bit tied. They're a little bit limited with what they can do to build around him.
If your team didn't make the move you were looking for, or if you think there is someone else that could add to the team that you love to put them over the edge, who's still available? DeMar DeRozan is out there. Miles Bridges is out there. Tyus Jones is out there. Caleb Martin, Gary Trent Jr., Buddy Hield, Luke Kennard. Yeah, you're getting a bunch of just kind of like three guys. Like, here's the guys you're going to stick over in the corner and be like, hey, man, we need you to make 40% of threes. That's what half of this list is. But there are guys that are available out there. Of course, the biggest name being DeMar DeRozan. How much will he demand? What is his kind of motivation at this point in his career? Does he go ring chase? Does he go somewhere where he actually feels like he fits? Or what's going on? I don't know if DeMar DeRozan really fits with what the Lakers need right now. You know, it seems like it's kind of like the whole bringing in Russell Westbrook deal here, where you're just like, let's just get a name and plug him in here. But I don't know if he really fits with what they're trying to do. So we'll interesting to see where he ends up as well. But at least some guys that can make a difference still available out there, even if it is just standing at the three-point line and hitting some of those. We'll see if there's any additional news that's happened while we've been on air right now. Also talking about these home run derby rule changes. See what you think about that. You're our baseball guy here. It's Matt Adam on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour number two of Sharp Money. Matt Brown in for Patrick Adam Burke here. Dustin also taking a little bit of time off as we got Wyatt Tomchek in the producer chair. Some good NFL talk, some good baseball talk. We're going to continue on with that baseball talk a little bit later in the show. I'm glad that you have a couple of other picks. I have some picks and I have some tickets that I like that are in my account. I'm wondering if maybe I need to start adding a little bit to my portfolio. I'm in a pretty decent spot with a couple of those, so I'm glad to talk through that with you. But let's head back over to the NFL. Vic Taffer, senior writer for The Athletic, covers the Raiders. Vic, how you doing today, man?
Doing good, bud. How you doing?
Doing great. And I think the big question as we head into the offseason here and into this season as we head into September is who's going to be starting at quarterback for the Raiders. I think everybody else just assumed out there that you go and you sign Gardner Minshew, that it's definitely going to be Gardner Minshew, but we actually hear that there might be a battle going on there. Is there really a chance that Aiden O'Connell wins this job, or is this all just to kind of motivate Gardner Minshew to make sure that he does everything he can in camp?
No, there really is a shot. When I'm with you, when they signed Gardner Minshew for $15 million guaranteed, I assumed that probably meant he'd be the guy, and I thought that was kind of a done deal. But, you know, Aiden's come back, and he's got a little more swagger, a little more confidence. He did okay last year in the spot duty. I think it was 5-5 as a starter, and obviously ups and downs. But the guy who has a decent arm, definitely can make all the throws. The mobility is a question mark, but I think the team liked how he responded. This year's kind of grown a little bit. He got more of a leadership role, so there is going to be a battle. I think it'll come down to maybe the preseason games, because you can't really tell, you know, practice or training camp practice is what these guys are going to do. But I think the guy that moves the team the better in training and in the preseason games will be the guy.
Vic, you know, I think another question about the offense here, they bring in Luke Getsy now as the offensive coordinator. So what do you think he's going to try to change up here where, you know, obviously changing the guard at running back, no more Josh Jacobs. What do you think he's going to try to change here with this Raiders offense?
Well, I think when you hire Luke Getsy, people kind of, Raiders fans kind of moan because the Bears last year weren't very good in offense. But I think you kind of, if you're the Raiders, you kind of say, you know what, that probably wasn't his fault. Maybe that was the quarterback. Maybe that was Justin Fields. So, you know, he has a decent background. He was with the Packers. He was a passing game coordinator in Green Bay. He worked with Devontae Adams there. So I'm sure you'll see a lot of plays for Devontae Adams. You'll see a lot of two tight end sets, get these both tight ends involved, Michael Mayer and Brock Bowers. So I think you're going to see heavy dose of running. That's what they did last year in Chicago and what Antonio Pierce wants to get done this year as well. So I think they're hoping for a big mix, kind of catch teams off guard and move the ball despite whoever's playing quarterback.
If we look at the, you know, we're we look at the odds here, Vic, obviously a ton. Chiefs minus 230 to win the division. You got the Chargers at 320. Raiders a little bit ahead of the Broncos, 9-1. Do you think this Raiders team, is there a scenario that exists outside of Patrick Mahomes somehow missing the entire season? Is there a scenario that exists where this Raiders team just greatly overperforms where we think they're going to be and they actually contend for this division, or do you think they're still a couple of years away?
I think there's a possibility. I think you have to look at last year, and I mean, they finished really strong. Their Antonio Pierce defense, I think, was top 10 or 9 overall. And they beat the Chiefs and KC on Christmas. So I think you look at those things and you think the hope is defense gets better. They got Christian Wilkins, which will free up some double teams off of Max Crosby. Everybody else is a year under their belts in the system, Patrick Graham. So they kind of build on that. Robert Spillane gets better at linebacker. Jack Jones becomes an impact player at cornerback. So that's the picture that they're hoping to paint, that the defense gets better and they can beat the Chiefs again when they play, you know, once or twice and stick in there. But That's the philosophy right now. The defense will lead them, and then the offense will not lag too far behind.
Vic Tafer joining us here on our Progressive Guest Line, senior writer over at The Athletic covering the Las Vegas Raiders. And, Vic, you know, I think a lot was made late in the year last year of the team rallying around Antonio Pierce. You know, had the interim tag. The players kind of made it very clear that they wanted him. That is who they ultimately decided on as the full-time head coach here, taking away that interim tag. Do you feel like the team still feels the same way that they did last year when they were vying for his job now that he is the full-time guy?
For sure. I think anytime a team, you know, lights the cigars in the locker room, I think that's part of that is they're so happy that Josh McDaniels is gone, you know, that the Wicked Witch is dead. I think that's a big part of it. And Pierce was smart to capitalize on that, change the energy, kind of got the players more invested, kind of let them pick what they want to do in practice as far as, you know, we'll do things your way if you promise results and the focus and the energy level that's always high. The leaders stepped up, so I think they got some ownership. I think they're definitely confident where they finished last year, and definitely it's been a very positive turnout in terms of, you know, players showing up in the offseason at the facility when they didn't have to. A big turnout, a lot of energy, so people are excited. I think they think that, like I mentioned, Christian Wilkins is a big-time addition. The defense will get better, and they also have faith in McConnell or Gardner Minshew. So I think right now the confidence is still pretty high.
Vic, I want to circle back to the Luke Getsy thing and how this offense may look going forward. And again, whether it's Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew, a new toy, a new weapon for those guys with Brock Bowers taken in the first round. Also some help on the offensive line, Jackson Powers Johnson taken in the second round. How do you expect this team to use Bowers throughout the course of the season? And, you know, people kind of thinking about it in terms of maybe the offensive rookie of the year markets, if he's a guy that, you know, gets featured prominently in the passing game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to give away too much, but you watch him in the practices in the offseason and mini camps, and he's lining up, you know, at tight end in the slot, outside wide in the backfield, and they hand the ball off to once in a while. So I think they realize what they have. I think they definitely didn't want to – they had chances to trade back. Teams want to trade for Bowers. They said no. So they already had Michael Mayer, so they had a good tight end already, but they figured it's too good to pass up. The explosiveness, the ability to kind of, you know, make matchups in your favor wherever he's lined up. So I think that's the way Luke Getsy's very excited about it, and we'll see how he does. But definitely, I think a big sign of how he does as a play caller is how well he utilizes Brock Bowers.
Vic, obviously you are know everything about the Raiders, but I'm sure you have studied the other teams in the division as well to see how they stack up. And we look at this Chargers team, and I get it. You bring in Harbaugh, it is a big move. You bring in a very established coach that everybody was kind of blaming what was going on there with the Chargers on the coaching staff. However, you start to look around from a talent perspective and you wonder if they really have enough for him to do something this year. Do you think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves with how much we think this Chargers team is going to improve just by basically adding a coach?
I do. I think it's going to be a process. I think, you know, obviously coming in, he has the history and he knows how to do it, but it's going to be definitely a time of adjustment in terms of the playbook and his style of coaching. I think the schedule, if I'm not mistaken, the first 6-7 games is pretty tough. So it's going to be hard to get off on a really good start. And I think at some point, he's in no rush. He's building this for the future. So at some point, if it's a matter of, you know, winning games this year versus developing guys in the future, getting young guys in there, making some moves, going to add some draft picks or in a trade, who knows. But I think at some point, you realize his focus is not on winning this year, and it shouldn't be. He's trying to build up a culture and a philosophy of the program. So I do think they're not going to do as well this year as people think they're going to do. I think there's going to be a learning curve, a tough schedule, and at some point, it's going to look towards the future.
Speaking of an AFC West team with a quarterback question, the Denver Broncos, you know, a lot of people saying, look, Sean Payton didn't draft Bo Nix to sit him. So Bo Nix kind of expected to be the starting quarterback here in Denver. What are your thoughts on that? What are your thoughts on the Broncos overall?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you pick a guy that high, people say you're crazy. I'm sure you're going to feel like you have to prove that you're right. But at the same time, I don't know if he's in a huge rush. I think Jared Stidham is fine in terms of a guy who can play for a few weeks or a month while Bo Nix kind of gets comfortable. I don't think Jared Stidham's a bad quarterback. He's not great, but I think you can definitely plug him in and maybe steal a win here or there. I think he's got some arm talent. So I don't know if I totally buy in on the whole rush to play Bo Nix. But, again, at some point, he has to play. They picked him, in my mind, way too high. But we'll see. I could be wrong.
Vic, odds makers have made the Raiders over-under at 6.5 wins, so you could actually cash a ticket and then be under 500. As you've evaluated the schedule and what you feel about this team heading into the season, is that disrespectful, or 6.5, 7 wins, something like that season, about where you have this team?
Yeah, I think it's disrespectful. And based on what they did last year, I get why people don't buy into the quarterbacks, and maybe people think if Amir Pierce is kind of a one-time deal, kind of you can't follow up what we did last year. But I think you look historically, if I'm mistaken, I think 4 of the last 5 years, the Raiders have gotten older in number. I think there's always a little bit of a skepticism. The numbers are pretty low. And, again, 6.5, I'm like, if they win 7 games, it's not a great season. I mean, so I think you have some wiggle room there where you can just kind of take the over and still not have to have a great year. So, like I said, the defense, I think, is pretty good. I believe in Max Crosby. I think Christian Wilkins is a big-time player. It's going to be a great, one of the best tandems up front in the league. I think the secondary is not that bad, so they should be okay. And I think Zamir White will be okay. He's not Josh Jacobs, but doesn't have to be. So I think it's kind of a similar path last year in terms of the talent. I think they won 8 games last year, so I don't see where 8 games is really that much of a stretch this year.
Well, Vic, I am fading the Chiefs this year, so I hope that the Raiders do play much, much better this year, and I hope that they are able to take them down. He's Vic Tafer. You can find him over at The Athletic at Vic Tafer over on the Twitter machine as well. Appreciate the time today, buddy.
All right, take care.
Yeah, I'm. I don't think they're going to be all that great, but I hope they are. I really do. I hope they are. And honestly, this to me, and obviously he's day in day out with this team. But how do you pay Gardner Minshew that money? How do you sign him that contract and not make him the starter? If you were going to go with Aiden O'Connell, if there was honestly even a question in your mind you were going to go with Aiden O'Connell, don't you just go sign a retread quarterback and stick him in there for a fraction of what you paid Gardner Minshew, and then you just kind of roll with Aiden O'Connell and see what you got?
Yeah, I would think so. I think that's exactly the way that I would go about it. Look, I mean, is it something where Getsy was like, you know, hey, I'm not a big believer in Aiden O'Connell. Let's go get somebody that, you know, maybe has a little bit more experience, maybe a little bit more of a track record at the position. Again, I mean, look, we know this. Like, this is just a very common thing in the NFL. Everybody knows this. If you don't have an elite star-level quarterback, you're not winning a Super Bowl. Yeah. So, like, if you're the Raiders, does it really matter who you use? Like, neither one of those guys are guys of the future, right? So you're kind of almost better off throwing O'Connell out there with no life jacket, and if he completely fails, cool, you're picking in the top 5 next year and you get a guy.
That was my only problem with this even Gardner Minshew thing in the first place with the Raiders.
Right.
So I was kind of like, all right, if you're not going to move up aggressively and try to go get a quarterback in the draft, then stink. Just stink. And then you can go in next year and try to get a quarterback.
The worst place to be in sports is in the middle.
Yeah, you don't want to do that at all. We'll see how it all pans out. Again, I hope they do better than things. I'm going to fade the Chiefs this year, probably to my peril. When we come back, we'll really break down this AFC West.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour number 3 of Sharp Money here on VSiN. Matt Brown, Adam Burke on the desk, pinch hitting for the guys who are taking some time off. Wyatt Tomchek on the ones and twos over here. We were talking some Survivor talk. Before we get to that, we had a declaration from one Adam Burke over here where it slipped out that I am in a couple of weeks, I'm heading up to Wisconsin. I know it's a year of the golf trip for me, but I'm heading up to Wisconsin to do all those golf courses up there. And you gave me a beer to try out.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I'll try it for you. I'm not a big beer drinker, but yeah, you know, whatever. I'll give it a whirl. I'll let you know what I think of it. And then Adam, right before you come in here, goes, most overrated beer there is. Most overrated beer there is. It was what's the beer?
It's called Spotted Cow.
Spotted Cow.
Only sold in Wisconsin.
Only sold in Wisconsin. So you've had it in Wisconsin then? And no good.
I mean, it's...
This is why we don't like Ohio people.
It's fine. Wisconsin is nothing against Ohio, to my knowledge.
I know, but there's
a lot of good breweries in Milwaukee. Broken Bat Brewing Company is a really good spot. Shout out to them. Spotted Cow is overrated. And also, Line and Kugel's is terrible.
I haven't had that one, but Spotted Cow.
You've never had a Line and Kugel, like a summer shandy?
Oh, okay, yes, then I've had that.
Yeah. Line and Kugel's is not good.
It's okay. Spotted Cow is the one I go for.
He's only been drinking for about 18 months. That's so true.
We gotten the. Has Greg Peterson rated Spotted Cow?
Yes, I think though I asked him that like maybe a month ago. Because I was going to Wisconsin to visit my family earlier this month, and he said that one was a very high-rated beer.
What is so? If you were, since we're talking about it, like if you were going to tell people, hey man, Adam, what's two beers I should go try? I mean, like what are two beers people should go try?
I mean, I've checked in like close to 2,000 on my Untappd app. So
really, wow,
two beers that I like in Wisconsin or just generally?
No, just in general. If people are just kind of like, hey man, then like what is you're on death row. Like, how about this? We're sending you out to Death Valley. Like we're sending you out to Death Valley. We don't know if you're coming back. It's 130 degrees. We have no idea whether you're coming back. You can bring two beers with you. What are those two beers?
If I can bring two beers with me?
Yeah.
All right. So there's a brewery in Ohio, in Sandusky, Ohio, called Clag. Stands for Cocky Little Asian Guy.
Oh.
Kaz, the owner, his beer is incredible. He has this Mama Bui IPA that's really, really good. He's so got that, and then also, I'll give one that's more widely available. So, from Russian River Brewing Company in California, Pliny the Elder is the best widely available double IPA. I guess it's not widely available, but they're distributing in Nevada now. Okay. If they distribute in Nevada, it's pretty widely available. Yeah. So, Pliny the Elder is extremely good.
There we go. See, there's your two recommendations.
I have an update from our great producer, Caesar, who's producing VSiN Primetime. He said Spotted Cow was 10 out of 10 on Greg's review.
I'm not surprised.
I don't think there was any bias.
Greg is a Wisconsin guy, though, right?
Yes. I think he's from...
There's bias, then.
Then there's bias.
I think he's from the Green Bay area, Appleton, if I'm not mistaken.
Appleton, north of the lake up there, right?
Anytime I go out of town, we go to breweries. Like, we kind of make either half a day or something like that, and we go to breweries wherever we are. So, I mean, I've been to a lot of different breweries.
Have you been to Abita Brewery in Abita Springs, Louisiana?
No. You know what? We were going to go on the second day that I was in New Orleans, but we wound up going somewhere else. But I did go to a couple of pretty good breweries down there.
The cool thing about if you're ever in the area and you want to take a little detour from New Orleans and go to Abita Brewery, Abita Springs, they'll start you out at the tour, and they will be like, all right, here we go. We're going to do the tour. And for those of you that don't care at all about the tour, you can just go right over there, and there's the tasting room. And, like, that's how they start the whole thing out or whatever. And then, like, half the people just leave and just go into the tasting room and have no interest whatsoever in the tour at all.
I mean, the tours are cool. We've toured a few distilleries, too, on the Bourbon Trail, along with Jack Daniel's Distillery, which isn't really on the Bourbon Trail, and it's not a bourbon anyway. But, yeah, I mean, all those things are really cool to go and do. And then, of course, you know, you get a sample. Rheingeist in Cincinnati, Ohio, was really good about that. Where, like, actually one of the owner's fathers gave us the tour. He's like, my son works here. So I was talking to him afterwards. I was like, what does your son do here? He goes, well, he owns it. I was like, yeah, he just works here. Sure.
There you go. I've done a bunch of the vineyards. I haven't done a ton of breweries, but maybe that's something I can start working in. All right, so Survivor Talk, we said there's a bunch of different contests out there. So this isn't kind of one size fits all, right? So you need to go in and you need to make sure that you know the rules to your Survivor contest. Is there extra weeks like Adam mentioned? Is it, you know, some of them allow you to lose once and you can get back in, right? Like there are some that allow you to rebuy. There are some that if you lose in the first 5 weeks or something, whatever it might be. So just make sure you know the rules of your contest as well. We talked about picking on a couple of teams. Patriots were one of them. Titans were another one. I think the Panthers have a chance to be better, Adam, but certainly when I say better, that doesn't mean they're going to be good, right? I mean, like, better is just better. That doesn't mean that they're going to be good. And I'm not 100% on the train that Bryce Young was a bust. I think he's put in a really tough situation last year when your number one wide receiver is Adam Thielen. Like, I don't know exactly what you really expected out of him in a horrible offensive line. So maybe they can be a little bit better.
I mean, better is 3-14.
I was going to say, but a little bit better doesn't mean very many wins. So obviously a team that you can go target as well.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I think right out of the gate, New England is a team that you want to go against because, you know, I mean, there's great incentive for Cincinnati in week one to look good, right? I mean, we've talked about this already. They have an easy part of the schedule kind of to start the year. This is a win that they need to get. And they're the biggest favorite on the board against the Patriots here in terms of the look-ahead numbers. And for me, like, unless you get a situation with Joe Burrow like you got last year where he hurt his calf in training camp and he was very compromised, like, with an injury-prone player, I like to think that this is the healthiest he's probably going to be throughout the course of the season, coming off of the wrist and all that. Again, I hope he plays a little bit in the preseason for us to see that. But, like, I go through week by week in the article, and not only look at the team that I would use, but also look at the considerations and kind of explain why I wouldn't take that team now as opposed to somebody else, because maybe there's a better chance to take them. Look, Cincinnati is supposed to be favored in 13 or 14 of their 17 games. Maybe there is a better spot to take them than New England right away. Mm-hmm. But, like, to me, I don't want to lose in week one.
Yeah.
Right? If I take a chance down the line, something like that, that's fine. I don't want to lose in week one. Now, there is the rebuy option, but I also don't really want to do that. So I got to make sure I get the week one pick right, because, you know, we know everything about everybody in week one. So we know who's healthy and who's not. So for me, I would just take the Bengals right away and then move it on down the line.
I'm with you on that, too, because, listen, I've, again, trademark division of death. Like, they are – that division could beat up on a bunch of the teams in that division, right? And like, when I say beat up, I'm not talking about, like, even wins and losses. I'm talking about, like actually beat them up. Like, those are going to be grinds of games, like, several times throughout the course of the year. Like I said, week one, you're getting the freshest, best version of Cincinnati. We understand, guys, this is training camp, things will happen, and we can amend what we're talking about. But, like, in theory, we're getting the best, freshest version of this team that we're going to get. And so I like going ahead and getting that win and moving on as well. That obviously is the strategy of picking on the Patriots as well. As week two, you start to look at these big favorites. Ravens are huge favorites over the Raiders. Jets, huge favorite over the Patriots in week three. Kind of heading back to what we were saying, some of the Raiders, you know, Raiders 6.5 win total, not expected to win very many games. Patriots, lowest win total there is on the board. So, again, we're going back and kind of picking on those teams.
Right, and as I was looking here, I mean, I'm going against the Patriots 4 times in the first 7 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, in the article. And, again, this is just a blueprint. This is just kind of plotting it out. The other thing you have to keep in mind is if you're going to make a deep run in this thing, you want to have good teams left, right? So it is difficult, say, in the first 3 or 4 weeks to take the Bengals, the Ravens, the Jets, the 49ers all off the board because those are all, you know, presumably good teams, right? And if you get late in the contest and all of a sudden, you know, you're in week 14 and all you have are like 500 teams left, that's a little bit difficult. So you do want to try to balance out, you know, when you are taking these teams, but also – you can do that by looking at what's going on that week. You know, are there opportunities where maybe I can take a lesser team as a, you know, 4.5, 5-point favorite to win outright, as opposed to a better team as a 7, 7.5, 8-point favorite to win outright because I can use them later in a tougher week, something like that. So, you know, I think that there are enough good teams and good situations that you can, you know, kind of take some good teams early, try to save some good teams, kind of balance them out throughout the course of the year. Also, I mean, you have your priors coming into the season, right?
Yeah.
You may have a season win total over bet that you like, that team is -2.5, -3 in the look-ahead market, but by game week, they might be 6.5, 7-point favorites because their body of work kind of, you know, supports such an adjustment in their numbers. So I kind of did that a little bit, too, with the forecasting in the article because, again, I mean, things will change based on injury, but things will also change based on if a team looks good or looks bad.
Yeah, so the other thing, too, is – Adam, the thing that really can turn these contests on their head, too, and change your strategy, and same mainly for the better, is quarterback injuries, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, those are the teams, too, we want to go in and be able to adjust on the fly and attack those teams, too, because, you know, if a quarterback's only going to miss 2 or 3 weeks, you need to strike while that team is playing with their backup, right? And so it might get you off of what you originally thought you were going to do. But you understand the opportunities is very small, and you have to take advantage of it in those, you know, couple of weeks in which you're able to attack maybe even a good team, right? I mean, maybe it's the Ravens who have to go to a backup, and now you're like, oh, well, this team is much worse without Lamar Jackson, something like that.
Yeah, for sure. And that's an important thing to mention, too, is that, you know, whatever the good team is, quote unquote, if good team loses a good player, they're not as good of a team anymore. So, like, you probably went into last season thinking, oh, yeah, I'm going to take the Jets in this spot. And then Aaron Rodgers plays like 6 minutes of the regular season. And when can you take the Jets after that point? You can't.
Yeah.
So there is also some equity in when a good team is healthy, you go ahead and fire away. Because, again, quarterback injuries are going to be such a big thing. So, like, Maybe I take the Jets early. Like, I have the Jets in week three over the Patriots, which makes a ton of sense. Does 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers make it through the season? Well, if he's there in week three, I might as well take him now and go ahead and bank that one.
And looking at your blueprint here, and you know, yeah, there are some teams we're using early, but let's even get to the back half here, starting in week 11. You still have the Eagles, Dolphins, yep, Cowboys, Bills, Rams, and Falcons all still available, right? And those are all teams I think are going to be good this year. And
right.
While, yes, you're firing early on some of these teams, there's still plenty left.
I got to the end, and I never even used Detroit. And I like Jared Goff to win the MVP.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're going to be really good.
Yeah. So, again, a team that you could sub in somewhere along the way if that were to be the case. But, again, it's a fun article, fun discussion for us to have as we continue on. Coming back here on Sharp Money.
Is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Hey, we got a deal for you. It's 13 months for the price of 12. VSIN Pro, $199 for 13 months instead of 12. VSIN.com/subscribe using the promo code Sharp, S-H-A-R-P. And yes, you can go in and get everything we do over at VSIN.com, including a video feed of this very here show. You'll be able to see what me and Adam look like if you had a VSIN Pro subscription. What do you think about that?
What does the VSiN Plus Plus subscription get you?
People can see what Wyatt looks like if they have a VSiN Pro subscription. You get 13 months of it for $199. VSiN.com/subscribe. Promo code SHARP. S-H-A-R-P. Matt Brown and Adam in here for the guys. And
I give you credit for not using the promo code HANDLE because we're on Sharp Money.
We are.
But the handle is your show.
It is.
On weekends.
It's also kind of the same colors, too.
Is it? Yeah. I don't
know. Like more yellowish type, right?
You know what? Don't know.
Okay.
Don't know what the color scheme is. I didn't even know there was a color scheme. Is there a color scheme?
Yeah, each show's got a different thing that's Greg Peterson experiences. Since we were talking about Greg, is like light blue, sky blue.
Oh, they didn't consult me on the color scheme, so I don't know.
Did you want to be consulted on the color scheme?
I mean, you know what? Being able to give your opinion never hurts, right? You know what I'm saying?
With your house, were you consulting?
You know,
it's one of those things.
You know, it's one of those things too, like something like this, where it's like, they say something to you about a color scheme, and you're like, what are they even asking me about this for? And then you look, and you go like, well, I don't really like that. And then you like give your opinion anyway. You know, you're kind of like, why are they even asking me I don't like that color yellow, like, or whatever. You know, so you think that you don't have an opinion on it, but you really do. Yeah, like, you're kind of like, I don't need to be. No one needs to consult me about that except, you know, I mean, maybe not that color
like the
red.
Age-old conversation of, hey, where do you want to eat? I don't care. You pick. I don't really like that.
Yeah, I'm not really in the mood for that. And it's like, well, then why? Exactly.
It's like we're eating ramen tonight.
Yeah, it's one of those deals. So, I'll find out what our color scheme is. I will.
Your job for Saturday.
Yeah, I'll figure it out.
I haven't eaten ramen since college, and I intend to keep that streak going.
You know, there are like
ramen. At least
ramen,
not like bad ramen.
You know, there are ramen places.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
Like.
Never really been.
So they're charging me, what, $12 for something that I used to pay 12 cents for whenever I was going to like a quarter? They used to be four for a dollar. Like, there was like, you would get four of the packages for a dollar.
Well, I mean, they're not putting like top ramen in front of you at a ramen restaurant.
I mean, I don't know why not. It's tasty. It's tasty as hell.
By the way, I just shot down our chances to ever get a top ramen sponsorship.
Yeah, I don't know why you did that, but I mean, not for me. I just said top ramen is tasty as hell, man. That was good. It got me through a lot in college. You know, I didn't want to cook. I didn't really want to cook stuff in college. Did you cook?
No.
Yeah.
No.
It was spaghetti, ramen, and then every now and then maybe like a grilled cheese sandwich.
But I mean, you can always find like a $5 pizza around a college.
Yeah. Little Caesars.
Well, I mean.
Well, we had Hungry Howie's at the University of Akron.
Okay.
And Europe Gyro. Europe Gyro's pizza was really good.
Now, try going to college in Vegas where everything's just expensive.
I guess it's supposed to be Europe Hero, right? Not Gyro.
Yeah.
Hero.
Yeah. What do you – so you –
I also lived at home, too, so.
You lived at home in college?
Yeah.
Was Chamba Hut wasn't over there by UNLV when you were
so quite
school,
the
right?
Ladies' man you were in college, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like, yeah. You go out to a bar, and you're kind of like, no, we got to go to your place. And she's like, no, we want to go to your place. And she's like, no, we got to your place. And she's like, I've got three roommates. And you're like, I have two, and they're my parents. So, like, let's go to yours. It's fine.
Also lived 30 minutes out, so that eliminated that as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. Man, some people, like, look back on the year like, yeah. So right after I got out of college is when things got good. Is that when it happened for you? Not in college, right?
Yeah, I mean, I moved out when I was 25, so I waited a little bit. I milked it as much as I possibly could.
But, yeah, I mean, it is expensive here. I'll admit. Yeah. It is expensive. Statute of limitations. Like, one of my buddies worked at one of the pizza places, one of the local pizza places in Baton Rouge. And so let's just say we had discounted pizzas from time to time. Show up at the apartment. You know, I mean, again, statute of limitations is over. He can't get in
right,
trouble
yeah.
for all
yeah.
that.
Is the pizza place still in business?
They are still in business. One of the chicken finger places that one of my other buddies worked at is not in.
Was it good or was it free?
Ooh, that's a good question.
What was that?
The pizza.
Well, what do they say? Like pizza and the other thing that's pleasurable. It's still. Yeah, I mean, it's no matter what. Even if it's bad, it's still good. You know, even if it's bad, it's still good. So we had that chicken finger place. On the other hand, is not in business anymore, and I'm sure we had something to do with that. Raisin Cane's, the very first one, was in Baton Rouge, by the way. It was founded in Baton Rouge. When I was in college, there was one Raisin Cane's, and it was on the campus at LSU.
I'm not going to say it. I don't want to offend Wyatt. I'm not going to say it.
Well, you might offend Matt here.
You don't like Raisin Cane's either?
I think it's fine. Also, I think crinkle-cut fries are the biggest waste of time in the world.
Well, the fries are just like the side. You know, the main thing with Raisin Cane's, the chicken, Texas toast, and the sauce.
Yeah. The only thing that saves Raisin Cane's is the cane sauce.
Yeah, and the bread.
The bread is good.
We would leave the bar, and we would just go buy like 30 pieces of bread and 10 sauces, and then that's all we ate. Like, we didn't even get the chicken and all the other stuff. We would just be like, yeah, we'd like 30 breads and 10 sauces, please. And they'd be like, are you serious? I'm like, very serious. Nice. Incredibly serious.
Speaking of Wisconsin, they're supposed to be getting their first Raisin Cane's here soon.
It's a big deal.
Vegas is finally getting Bojangles whenever it actually gets done.
It is world. It's like worldwide now. The guys pitched it in his grad school class, and the teacher was kind of like, "You're only going to sell chicken fingers? Like, no one's just like, no, whatever." And then some other guy in the class was like, "I think it's a pretty good idea." And then they kind of like started talking about it. Next thing you know, boom, chicken finger. Now it's worldwide. The guy's like almost a billionaire with a B.
Like, good for him.
That teacher looks stupid now.
Yeah, for slinging chicken fingers.
I think it's fine. It's not the kind of place I'm going to wait like a half hour in the drive-thru for.
I don't know if I've ever done the drive-thru for Raisin Cane's. I would never wait in line
for anything anyway.
Like it's in and out.
Food. Yeah,
I'm just going to go straight in. I'm not going to wait 30 minutes in the drive-thru.
I got to say, so the in and out in the Link Promenade down on the Strip is fantastic. Every other in and out I've had around the Valley, just not as good.
Interesting.
Just service or just overall food?
I didn't know that was the thing.
Both.
Okay.
So we were talking Major League Baseball futures earlier, and we got off topic, and you said, hey, there is one that I actually like and one that people can go and put in their account at a big number right now. I don't think the Cy Young race is close to being over at all in either league. Like, I think it is still wide open in both leagues. I don't care that Scooble's plus 170. Burns obviously is awesome with a proven track record, but plus 250, too short for him. I think there is a lot of people over in the American League that could still win this thing, and you like one that is a nice fat number that if he plays his way into the conversation, you should be able to monetize the ticket no matter what.
Yeah, so I think Tanner Bibee at 40-1 for Cleveland is worth it. I realize, full disclosure, I am a Guardians fan, but also that means I watch this team very, very closely. Recently, they changed Tanner Bibee's pitch mix a little bit, and he's been generating a lot more strikeouts as a result. You look at him in the month of June, 40 strikeouts and 28 and a third, 286 ERA, his best month statistically by a pretty large margin. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that they changed his pitch mix quite significantly. And that's a really important thing, because what they did in changing his pitch mix was generate more swing and miss. And that's what you need. You need to start racking up strikeouts at this time of the year if you want to be part of that Cy Young conversation. Cleveland is one of the best teams in the American League from a record standpoint. I don't know if that's going to be sustainable. But when you look at Bibee and you look at the rest of this rotation, the rest of the rotation is terrible. So this is one of those things that will kind of stand out a little bit. We kind of talked about the MVP market earlier where, like, Josh Naylor is not really hitting. Stephen Kwan is. But most guys in the Guardians lineup aren't. Jose Ramirez should be getting more love than he is in the MVP market for what he means to that team. It is very, very well known that Cleveland's rotation is not good. But if Bibee can shine the rest of the way, and I think that he can, and I think he's okay with the workload going forward because of the way that Cleveland has developed him, I think at 40-1, he can be a guy who maybe in August you're talking about him being 10-1, 12-1, something like that, maybe even moving down more.
And the thing I like about Bibee, too, is like it's almost the same bet that we're talking about with Ramirez. Like, he struggled at the beginning of the year, and that's why the overall stats right now aren't just – blowing you away popping off of the page, but they're still good. I mean, it was just, but it's like he's not one of these dudes that still has the sub 2 ERA or whatever or something like that, because there was a few bad starts there at the beginning of the year. But you look, the stuff you would love to see with the pitcher, Bybee's sitting there, increased his K rate up to 29% so far this year, decreased his walk rate down to 5.8% so far, increased the swinging strikes up to 12.7% from 11.1% last year. So everything across the board looks like he's just doing better, right? And so you would like to believe that that is kind of the trend that we're seeing with Bybee as we move forward.
Well, and look, I mean, Tarek Skubal is very deserving of being the favorite. No doubt about that. Tarek Skubal's also never thrown over 150 innings in his career. So, like, that's a guy that you have major injury risk with. Corbin Burns, I get it. But, like, Garrett Crochet, he may be traded to the National League. I mean, the White Sox should trade Crochet and maybe Luis Robert.
I was going to say, they need to, like, break it down. Yeah, that team is horrible.
Jack Flaherty's going to get traded. If he stays in the AL, then he's still in the mix for this. But if he goes to the NL, then he's obviously not. Seth Lugo just doesn't – he's not a strikeout type of guy. Tanner Houck's starting to kind of fade a little bit. Cole Reagans, he's been knocked around a little bit.
I was going to say, it looks like he might be starting to, I'm not going to say run out of gas, but like maybe, I will say this though, maybe get figured out a little bit.
Right, yeah. And that's also another one where he's a guy who hasn't really had that type of workload before. So I think there's a case for Bybee to be moving up this board, especially if Cleveland continues to play well. And also, he's got a really good defensive team behind him and the best bullpen in baseball that's going to protect some of those wins and those kinds of things.
And like we're saying, he doesn't have to win this at 40-1. He didn't have to win this. He needs to just get heads up with Skubal or get heads up with Burns or something like that. And at that point, you can make money off of that ticket. So that's kind of what we're looking for here in all this. We'll go a little bit further into today's card in Major League Baseball. And, of course, we still want to get into that last winless team market over in the NFL.